Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of the Hyper IgM podcast. In today's episode, I have a conversation with a fellow patient, Josh. Josh is 16 years old, lives in the UK, and has received a stem cell transplant like me. In this episode, Josh and I discuss post-transplant complications and Hyper IgM's impact on our lives and who we are. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third episode of the Hyper IgM podcast. I am your host, Ezra Feynman, and today I am joined by Josh. How are you today, Josh?
I'm good.
Awesome. Great to hear. So before we get started, just tell us a little bit about yourself, if you have any hobbies, and what do you like to do in your spare time?
I'm 16 years old. I'm interested in programming and gaming. In my spare time, I usually just play games or do some coding.
Cool. Awesome. So for our viewers who don't already know what Hyper IgM syndrome is, Hyper IgM is a 1-in-a-million rare disease that causes a person's immune system to not function properly. People with Hyper IgM are unable to make antibodies, which means that if they get sick, they have a hard time fighting off the infection and can get very ill. Hyper IgM patients are also at a higher risk of developing cancer. Without a stem cell transplant, life expectancy for a person with Hyper IgM is an average of 30 years old. However, some do live into their 40s or 50s. So, with that being said, Josh, do you remember the first time that you've really became aware of Hyper IgM? So, obviously, you were born with it, right? So, when do you think you really started understanding, like, oh, this is what I have?
So, I don't think there's an exact date where I realized how, like, severe it was and, like, what I was truly dealing with. I think it's just something I've been aware of for as long as I've been alive, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been a part of us, so, yeah. Interesting, yeah. I mean, for me, I don't know if I really, like, I don't have, like a, you know, big moment where I really remembered, figuring out what Hyper IgM was. I feel like as I've grown older, my understanding of what it really is has definitely developed a lot, which I'm sure it has for you as well. So, but other than that, yeah, I feel like it's definitely always been a part of my life. And like I said, Hyper IgM is a 1 million rare disease, but besides this podcast, have you ever met anybody else with Hyper IgM syndrome?
I don't think I have. There are always, like, talks about meeting other patients of Hyper IgM, but I don't think we ever, like, went through with it or, like, actively, like, planned it out. It was just, like, mentioned in passing conversation, like, we do it one day, but, you know. And yeah, it never really went any farther than that.
Am I your first meeting with someone that also had Hyper IgM? Am I number one?
Yeah, I'd say you are.
Oh, I'm honored. I'm honored. So I know that you had a stem cell transplant when you were 21 months old. So I doubt you remember anything, but is there any at all, like, or even like remembering from like pictures, is there anything that you've recalled from actually going through it? Which, I don't know, interesting to hear if you do.
The one thing I remember about hospital is this is a memory that is actually disputed by my parents, of like having like blood taken. So a doctor came with a syringe, and like at the time I just remember like seeing like blood come out, like just the syringe being filled up with blood. But my parents say, like, it didn't happen, but I remember it happening, so, you know.
Really? That's interesting. So you think it happened, and your parents don't. That's crazy. I don't remember much from going through it. I remember, like, some of the fun stuff. So, speaking of going through transplant, so where did you have your transplant?
I had my transplant at the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London.
Okay, and so did that make transplant, like, harder in any way? Like, did you have to, like, travel there? Did you have to live, like, far away from your home?
Well, London, from where I am, is, It's like a train ride away, which is a bit of distance. It's like an hour away by like via commute. But I think what happened with the transplant is that there'd be like a rotation. Like, I think they stayed in London for the duration of the transplant. There was like a rotation of like one parent. Like, for example, my mum would stay in the hospital for like a week or like a night. She'd stay in like, I think, like a hotel close by the hospital. Mm. And it's up between, like, the hospital and the hotel.
Okay. Yeah, so for me, I had my transplant at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York City. And we live maybe, I think it's about, like, 30 minutes from New York City. So traveling, it wasn't, like, terrible. For the majority of my transplant, at least this is what I remember, my parents were pretty much with me for the majority of the time, both of them. I mean, I'm sure there was some switching, but I mean, I don't remember that much from actually being in the hospital to tell you exactly, but that's what I remember from mine, at least. So after you completed treatment, what were your lifestyle restrictions post-transplant?
We lived in, like, the countryside, which was beneficial for me because I had to, like, be in isolation at the time.
Mm.
But, like, when I was allowed to go out, I think from what my mum told me, she had to put, like, this, like, protective screen around my pushchair to sort of protect me from the outside world. But where I live was very beneficial for my condition because it had more open spaces, like open remote spaces, and it wasn't like as crowded as cities were.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. Yeah, and I've never even thought about that like that, having like differences with location. That's interesting. Yeah, for me, I definitely remember having to like put on gloves whenever I left the house and stuff like that. You know, washing my hands every 6 seconds, just like stuff like that, which has some of it's actually carried on to my life now. Kind of staying on that same line of thought. So, did you have any significant post-transplant complications?
Well, 5 years after my transplant, when I was 6, I developed like a tumor in my kidney. It's called a renal cell carcinoma, which is common in men over 50, but extremely rare in children. I was diagnosed in 2014. The last diagnosis they have of like a young child with like renal cell carcinoma was 15 years ago at the time. So given that I was diagnosed in 2014, the last case would have happened in 1999, I think.
Wow.
It was detected quite early at stage 1, so they were able to remove it with surgery. They removed some of the lymph nodes just to check they hadn't spread anywhere. And I think August 5th actually marked the 10-year anniversary of it happening.
Oh, awesome. Well, congratulations. So that must have been incredibly hard for you. Do you remember more of that than your actual transplant, since you were 6 at the time, you were older?
Yeah, I remember a lot more from that. I think the same day, we went to Western Supermare for, like, a nice day out. My mum got a call from the doctors, which basically told her, like, hey, we've detected a 4-centimeter hospital in his kidney, and it's not a blood clot like we assumed it was. We basically had to get there quite quickly. So what I remember from that day is when we got home from the beach, we were just packing bags, packing our bags and setting off again. And I remember being, like, really confused, because, like, for me it was like we got into the house and everyone was leaving, and I was just like, hey, wait, where are we going? And then I remember the first day quite clearly. I remember when I got to the hospital, like, I was in a room with, like, a sort of, like, chair that was, like, black. Like, sort of like a dental chair. I sat in it, and I was moved to, like, a wall of, like, a bunch of other kids. And it was there I was told I had to have an operation. And I didn't think anything. I didn't think I like cried or anything. I just thought, oh no, like that. Just I knew what operation meant, and I was just like, oh no.
Yeah. So for me, actually, I can kind of relate to having some issues post transplant. So 6 months after my second transplant, I developed autoantibodies that attacked my red blood cells and platelets, and I had to go back into the hospital for another month post transplant, which is like the last place I wanted to be, and I'm sure my parents wanted to be after just spending so much time going through two transplants in the hospital. And after I had to be on high dose steroids and other medications that delayed my immune system from fully coming back. So, you know, the whole point of having a transplant with hyper-IgM is to get a new immune system, and mine was delayed coming back even further than, you know, to begin with hyper-IgM. So, you know, I do actually remember kind of finding out, like, that my cells were going crazy. I kind of remember the moment, actually, that I found out. I don't remember having any, like, reaction to, I feel like I was just kind of, maybe in shock. I'm not really sure. But I do remember that little bit of it. And I'm sure that was very hard on you, but do you remember anything, like, positive or, like, fun that you did either during transplant, which is when you were very young, or, like, during that time period with your kidney?
Well, with my transplant, I remember, one Christmas, I got, like, one of the presents I remember getting at Christmas was, like, a ball of some kind, and for my, cancer treatment, I remember a lot more from that. For my cancer treatment, I stayed at, like, two hospitals. I had a short stay at Bath IUH, and I had, like, the longest stay where I was operated on in Bristol Children's Hospital. I remember, in Bath IUH, my sister got to do this art thing at the hospital, and she made these, like, clay penguins. It's either, this is where my memory starts to conflict a little bit. I think when I was receiving treatment in hospital, or, like, having to stay overnight in hospital for the first day, where I wasn't operated on, I think it was then I got gifted a newer iPad. I think it was an iPad 2. I used to think it was an iPad Air 2, but it was an iPad 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a gift I appreciated a lot, because I remember, like, making, like, short little videos on it. I remember spending a lot of my time in hospital either, like, playing a game on my newer iPad or just, like, watching a video. I was really into, like, storms and tornadoes at the time, so that was, like, 90% of the content I consumed. But I remember, during my treatment after my surgery, there was this kid in the ward with me who had broken his leg really badly. And I think I gave him my iPad. I remember two things about him. I gave him my iPad so he could watch, like, Home Alone 4. That's one of the other things I remember, watching Home Alone 4 with Pete. I don't know why it was that Home Alone specifically, but it's one of the Home Alones I remember the most, because I watched it that many times. And the second time was, because I was really into Minecraft at the time. That boy gave me redstone tips, but I forgot them all completely because it's been 10 years.
That's, wow, I mean, that was, you remember a lot, yeah. I don't remember anything close to all that. But that was very nice of you to give your iPad. Yeah, that was awesome. And going back to, like, you were saying how you were watching all those videos and stuff in the hospital. I remember either, not necessarily during it, I know I was during transplant as well, but also my frequent checkups post-transplant where I had to go back to the hospital just for them to check to make sure everything was still okay. I feel like that's where I really got, like, my liking to, like, video making and editing and stuff like that, which obviously I'm using now with the podcast, so I'm kind of combining both of my interests here, helping people with hyper-IgM, creating awareness for it, and also video making, which is amazing. And so, yeah, I feel like that kind of, I took that away from the hospital. I definitely think that without it, I wouldn't be as, you know, into videos, maybe. And looking back on your Hyper IgM journey, do you think that, like, either being transplanted, being in the hospital with Hyper IgM, or your cancer treatment, has that, like, made you want to do anything different with your life, or affected your life as a whole, at all?
I can't really imagine myself without having the transplant. Maybe things would have been different if I didn't have, like, cancer or any sort of, like, surgery, but I was also quite young at age 6. I think at age 6, I wanted to be, like, the Prime Minister, and now I want to be, like, a software engineer, so...
That changed.
I guess so.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it affected both of us because we're on this podcast now, spreading awareness for it and trying to help people, other people with it, or people that know people with it. And that's a great silver lining to Hyper IgM and the tough experiences that we've both been through. And although you don't think Hyper IgM has affected you that much, do you think it's affected your family more than you, maybe? Or the same, or... What do you think?
I definitely think it's affected my family. Like, it put, like, tons of stress on my parents, like, my mum especially, and my dad. But I think whenever we're talking about it, they said the most important part was the fact that they managed to, sort of stick together throughout, like become stronger as a result of it. Because, as per my mum, she mentioned that, met a lot of, like, the parents she spoke to about, like, having kids with Hyper IgM, their families just completely broke apart. And with my sister, during my treatment, she had to be, like, sent away to, like, relatives, like, cousins, because, you know, she was quite young at the time I was being treated, and because they didn't want her to just be in the hospital all the time and, like, get bored, they thought, like, our relatives could take care of her, and she could act like fun that way, so, yeah. Though I think it's why she's afraid of hospitals nowadays, so, you know.
First let me say that I definitely think that I've grown closer to my parents because of transplant, because I spent so much time with them and only them. It shows that if we've been through that, we as a family, and we can go through anything. Nothing's gonna stop us, right? We've conquered it already. So also, when I see, like, hospitals or, like, bad things happening in hospitals on, like a TV show or, like, in, like, a book or something, I kind of feel like those, like, scenes always kind of, like, hit me harder than, I feel they would someone that hasn't lived in the hospital for a big chunk of their lives, you know? Like, I feel it an increased, like, feel of, like, empathy towards the people, like, on the screen or in the book or something like that, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I get that as well. I mean, last year, I think I had to add counseling because I just started in, like, mid-2022, but it just kept getting worse, where I just started to, like, really focus on my health. I started to believe that there was always something, like, happening. Like, any slight pain was immediately something, like, really severe. Like, I pulled my shoulder quite badly that year, and, like, when I got, like, a sharp pain on here, I thought it was a lung tumor somehow.
Wow, yeah, so...
And it's because I googled it, and it told me that, like, sharp pain around, like, this area could be a sign of, like, a really rare, like, type of lung cancer.
Dr. Google's never good.
Yeah, my parents learned that early in my transplant, because they searched it up, even though the doctors told them not to, and they got told I had, like, severe combined immune deficiency by Dr. Google, and they were thrown into a very deep state of despair because they thought I was going to die.
Yeah. Yep. It's a mental health. It's, I mean, obviously it's physical health, right? With no immune system, hyper IgM eliminates that. But it's mental battle too. I mean, I would still consider myself not a full, but like I still have some. I'd say that I'm a little bit of a germaphobe now. Like I don't like being dirty. I don't, like I said before, I wash my hands a lot. I just don't. I hate being sick. Being sick is one of my least favorite things. Like I just hate being sick, and I feel like I have like a more of a like disdain towards being sick than a regular person would be. Like, oh, I just have a cold, but I'm like, oh, like I have a cold. Like I get like angry about it almost, and I just really don't like being sick. So
yeah, with illnesses, I've noticed that like while my immune system now clears. Somehow, I went from having basically no immune system to clearing up illnesses faster than literally anyone else in my family. But it tends to hit me harder, like especially with colds. I get like really ill with like colds. Like it hits me a lot harder. I like sort of stay out of school for a bit, but I recover quite quickly.
I mean, I've had both ends of the spectrum. I've had being like. Like, my family goes down with something, and then I just don't get it, or I will get it the absolute worst.
My entire family got COVID, and I was the only one in my family who didn't get COVID.
And now, so, obviously our parents know a lot about hyper-IgM, and our close family knows everything. But I also feel like, luckily, hyper-IgM doesn't even need to come up like with any of my friends anymore because we don't have it anymore, right? So which is a good thing, but I choose to bring it up to bring awareness to hyper-IgM, and also that's just my story, right? That's who I am. I feel like hyper-IgM is a vital part of who I am as a person, so for my close friends to not bring it up, I feel like I'm kind of leaving out a part of me, you know? Do you feel the same in any way?
Yeah, I'd say I do. I do think hyper-IgM is quite a big part of my life, and whenever I meet new people, I always mention it in passing to them.
So I think we are getting ready to wrap it up here. Are there any closing statements that you have that you want to share with us overall about hyper-IgM, about anything about you, anything like that?
I think I'll start by saying that I'm one of the more, like, I don't know if interesting is the right word to say it, because with my immune system, currently my parents just call it, like, my numbers. I guess it's, like, my numbers for like my immune system, they're low, but my immune system is still functioning like quite well. I guess it's, from what I've heard, it functions like a lot better than many people in my family. So yeah, that's just to kind of like, not even the doctors know what's going on. That's the thing. Like on paper, it shouldn't be working as well as it does. But I have like yearly trips to the hospital to like get blood tests done.
That's all you have to say for our episode.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Josh, for coming on here. We talked about a lot of things that haven't been talked about on this podcast, the mental health side of going through transplant. So thank you so much for all of your insight. You've actually made me learn a little more about my own experience. Knowing someone else has kind of had some similar things to me is awesome to hear. So everyone watching, be sure to tune in for our next episode. And thank you all so much for watching or listening. We will see you all in the next episode. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast, rate or like this episode, and share. It means a lot. Stay tuned for more.